Last month, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg kicked off a first-of-its-kind program to bring equity back to America's roads by reconnecting neighborhoods racially segregated or destroyed when the interstate highway system was built in the late 1950s. As a book and PBS documentary explain, some of those communities walled off by highways had provided food and shelter for black motorists traveling across a segregated country. The entire history of black drivers in America is a fraught one. Here's MIT history professor Craig Steven Wilder in the film.
For me, the term driving while black isn't just a slogan. It's not just part of our political rhetoric. It's not just something we say to remind ourselves of the persistence of racism in the United States. It's a very personal experience of remembering, in fact, the anxiety, the fear.
The film, Driving While Black, Race, Space, and Mobility in America, is streaming now. And as the summer driving season kicks into gear and some of that history will be corrected through the new construction, we thought we'd revisit our talk with historian Gretchen Soren from 2020. Her work is the basis for the film. Welcome.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you so much.
So you've written a book on this, also called Driving While Black. You approached filmmaker Rick Burns about making this into a documentary. What did you want people to know?
Well, I think, as I was working in the research for this project, I realized that this was really a story about mobility and about mobility denied. So we really had to go all the way back to the beginning and look at enslaved people coming to the New World and not being able to move about freely. Mobility is central to freedom. So right. When the automobile comes into existence in the 20th century and African Americans have more disposable income and are moving into the middle class, they want to get on the road because they can, because that freedom had been denied for generation after generation.
But it's still petrifying, as we'll hear. But I want to go back to what you were saying. No mobility on a slave ship, no choice there. As a slave, they needed papers to get around. And the first kind of slave-catching militias became our modern police forces. I mean, that's how they were born. So there's some DNA there. And then while blacks could move post-slavery, there were still terrible restrictions. The main one being fear.
There were so many places in the country where African Americans could not go. There were sundown towns. Those are towns that you had to be out of before sundown or something terrible would happen. There were angry mobs that you had to deal with. And everything, of course, north and south was segregated. And you didn't necessarily know the rules because the way segregation worked, there were different rules of etiquette in every single state. And in the South, while there were signs that told you colored only or whites only, in the North, segregation was by custom and tradition. So you just were expected to know where you were not welcome.
Yeah. And as we move through time, you know, there's buses, there's trains, but segregation there. And then come cars. But still with this fear, I mean, Americans all across the country, white Americans were jumping into cars to go see the USA and their Chevrolet. But for blacks, it was still packing everything because you couldn't stop.
So since you couldn't stop, African Americans really preferred to drive these really large cars, these really heavy cars. And the reason wasn't because of vanity. They wanted large cars because they had a large trunk. And in that trunk, you could carry everything that you needed. You might carry blankets and pillows because you couldn't stop at a hotel. You might carry all of the food that you needed for whatever the trip was because there were no restaurants that you could stop at. You might carry a can or two of gasoline because you didn't know if the gas station that you pulled into would sell you any gas. So you really had to carry a lot of stuff in your car just to make sure that you could get your family from point A to point B safely. And of course, you had to carry that large coffee can as a pee can. And I mean a can that your family could use as a toilet just in case you weren't allowed to use the bathroom at the local gas station.
This is an ancient history. This is 40, 50, 60s. And you have some memories of this?
Well, and you know, as I worked on this, I started to really understand my parents. So I'm the product of the Great Migration. My parents moved to New Jersey from North Carolina in 1948. Every summer, we would get in the car, the family Ford, and we would drive back to Fayetteville, North Carolina. But we would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and drive in the dark because, you know, my father felt it was good to get an early start. Well, I learned as I did this research that most African Americans like to drive in the dark because when you're driving in the dark, it's harder to tell who's in the car. It's less likely that you're going to be stopped.
Yeah. And many of us know aspects of this who are not Black and wouldn't have had that family history. But there was the film Green Book about Black jazz pianist Don Shirley, who used this Negro motorist Green Book to help him find places to stay, because there's so many ironies here. Yes, how fearful, how it makes your blood boil to think that there are families doing this. On the other hand, what sprung up around this were these places across the country compiled in this Green Book where Black families knew they'd be welcome.
Yes.
This was all created by a mailman, Victor Hugo Green, from New York City, who wanted it to travel to see relatives down south. He put together this guide, found a white publisher. A wonderful travelogue and a wonderful travel world sprung up.
A huge network, a network of tourist homes and guest houses and hotels and motels and restaurants and little sandwich shops. And these were the places that were welcoming, the places that wanted African-American patronage. And also it had advertisements for gas stations. So you knew which places would accept you and where you could use the bathroom. Victor Green and his guide was not the only one. There were dozens and dozens of these guides. But this is how African Americans navigated across the country.
Yeah. Then a couple things happened. I'm going to trip through time here a bit. But you had the Civil Rights Act of 1964, of course, welcome. But in some ways, it hurt this world that you just described, because white-owned businesses finally opened to Black Americans. Also, the interstate road system is built in 1956, these huge freeways, which allowed Blacks to travel faster and more freely on the huge freeways and not go down these little scary side roads, which also took them away from some of these resorts and Black places of business. So much was lost there. But what stayed is that sense somewhere. I mean, do you feel it connected to the history you just described of your own parents? Do you feel that in your cell structure when you drive?
You know, it's funny. I was telling my husband the other day that whenever I see a police car, it just catches me up short. It terrifies me. And I think of so many African Americans going out on the road when they see a police car. We certainly don't hate the police, but the feeling that you don't want to encounter that one police officer, male or female, that could be a racist. That's, I think, the current terror. Every person that worked on this, all of the scholars, had some story about being stopped by the police or having their child stopped by the police. It's quite terrifying.
Well, or even having to tell your child, chances are this could happen to you. Here's Pasadena City College professor Christopher West, who's just explained how devastating this is to have to tell your children the talk. Here he is.
I think it's really, really tough for the majority of Americans to begin to even understand the gut-wrenching horror that is driving in a racist society.
Parents today were children in the 50s and 60s and 70s, driving at night with their parents out of fear.
I remember during the unrest in Newark in the 1960s, I was in a car with my mom, and we were going home to the suburbs, and my mother had on her headlights, and we got stopped at a checkpoint, and a National Guardsman started screaming at her that she shouldn't have her headlights on. And I remember thinking, as I worked on this, that story came back to my mind. And, you know, she didn't understand that she wasn't supposed to be driving with her headlights on. It was nighttime. But he had his gun leveled at us because he assumed that she was trying to blind him with her headlights, which couldn't have been further from the truth. So it really kind of frightens me because there's so many misunderstandings. You know, police will assume that someone who's African-American, it must be a drug dealer if you're driving a nice car, or he must be involved in some kind of criminal activity. We stereotype people.
And assumptions are made about police officers because...
Absolutely.
It's life-saving. You want to be prepared for what has happened and might happen again, even though that's unfair in that direction as well.
Absolutely. It's totally unfair that we have stereotyped all of the police as if they are a monolithic group. And I know that there are so many police that are very upset about what they see happening and about their profession being maligned.
I tell you, Gretchen Soren, again, co-creator with Rick Burns of the new documentary Driving While Black, watching this will go a long way to helping people understand how we got here.
Thank you.
Gretchen's also the author of the book of the same name that the film was based on and the director of the Cooperstown grad program of the State University of New York at Oneonta. Professor Soren, thank you.
Thank you so much, Robin.